I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
You are all about to get on this record.
The world is getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces on the big puzzle.
And now, your host, Barry Prince.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, kids and grannies, cats and gators, to this one Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. And I'm broadcasting through the facilities of Revolution Radio. I am in Studio B. Thanks for joining me today. Revolution Radio, folks, is a viewer-supported station. If we didn't get funding from our viewers, we would cease to exist. If you can throw a few bucks into the kitty, I know that the operators and owners of this station would much appreciate, even a coffee a month would be much appreciated. It all adds up. People that have listened to my show over the last 3, 4, 5 years have had the pleasure of listening to Jürgen Vollrath talk many times on my show. I've been joined by Jürgen for the first hour here today. To say I look forward to this conversation would be an understatement. Always brings good stuff to the table. Jürgen, how are you doing? And welcome back to the show.
Hello, Barry. It's a pleasure to be back. Thanks a lot for inviting me again. I always appreciate our conversations. And welcome to everyone else who regularly listens to the podcast. Hopefully, you're bringing in new people along to listen, because some of the information we have is very important to get out there. And let me just preface everything by saying that people need to know. Everything that I say and that I do is not based on what I read from others. It's based on life experience. It's based on my work, not only as an entertainer throughout the world. I've been a lead singer in bands and duets and trios ever since 1969. I was a stand-up comedian in 1964. I never made it to the big time, but I was always very close. In acting, I was close. I had my 50 acres I used in about 20 movies. So also, my sideline, when we had businesses in Ottawa, the capital of Canada, we had federal government and provincial government and city government contracts, so we know how all of that works. Also on the side, I was on the board of directors with Dr. Ritchie at the Human Rights Institute of Canada as a sideline thing that never paid us a nickel. Also a spokesperson and now director at large for Canadians for Language Fairness, fighting for the rights of English speakers in Canada to take their rightful place in the halls of power in Canada. I've been fighting that fight for 40 years. So my take on things is based on hard evidence. It's based on documentation that I've read. When I was with the Human Rights Institute of Canada, Dr. Ritchie, I was introduced to her because I gave a speech about my wife who had been infected by the tainted blood in the tainted blood scandal of the early 80s, which got me into a lot of fights that I'm in now. She heard that speech, was in tears, and invited me on the board of directors of the Human Rights Institute for the years that she was still around. She passed away a few years ago. God rest her. I've told people in Alberta they should wise up and erect a statue of Dr. Ritchie for her fight for the rights of Canadian Indigenous peoples when she was on the Queen's Council in Canada, the first woman, by the way, to achieve that honor. She got the Order of Canada. She was going to get the Order of Ontario, but they reneged on giving it to her when they found out that she was fighting for the rights of English speakers, not only in Canada, but in the province of Ontario, the city of Ottawa, and all the places where the language of French started to take over everything, basically. If you look now, if you were to remap the country of Canada, I would say Quebec would include most of eastern Canada, specifically New Brunswick. There is now, it's the only bilingual province in Canada, and yet there's a village now in northern New Brunswick that has declared French their only language of business. So you can still get a few things in English, but they just in a bilingual province. So you see where that's gone. At any rate, I'm rambling on here. I just thought I'd give that preface because I think it's important for everyone to know. You have left, right, and all that BS that involves the political spectrum and all that, but you have a new era of social media pundits, narrators. Just look at all the various podcasts you can get your news sources from now. I mean, it is everywhere. And yet there is still very few that base their knowledge on what they've seen and what they've done. My experience with the whole system is, number one, I'm an immigrant. I came in 1955, had to learn the language. Number two, a German immigrant who was hated by everybody. It was still fresh in 55, the Second World War. A lot of relatives had been killed. There was a distaste for us. And as a result, as a young boy, I got beat up. I had to fend for myself eventually, and I did. But that was a real struggle, and I never complained about it, but it has to be known. At the same time, we obeyed the laws of the land, we learned English, and we worked our butts off. My dad, I never saw him when I was a boy growing up. He didn't care about my sports, he didn't care about my music, nothing. He was too busy trying to make a living for us in a new land. And now, fast forward from 1955 to now, I'm on the fringe, the unacceptable fringe minority. That is unacceptable to the people in power in this country. We have digressed as a nation to something that commended people for their work and their work attitude, to something that relishes people doing absolutely nothing so that they can take complete control and rule them as if they're just fodder for whatever they need. And there's proof of that by the rise of MAID and all these other things. Sorry, Barry, but I had to start that because there's so many phonies out there. And the more I see people, you know, clinging on to some of these false pundits, some of these I would say when you're in a movement of freedom, when do we start checking people's resumes to see what they've really done?
Yeah. Sorry, I had somebody walk in on me there.
That's okay, Barry. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. We've reached a tipping point in Canada. I really feel we're starting to make progress. I'm starting to see more and more Canadians waking up every day. I'm starting to see the numbers that we need necessary. I'm kind of sitting back right now and taking it all in. I think we're going to turn this around, Jürgen. I really have seen some solid indications in the last couple, 3 weeks. that people are starting to wake up to what's going on. Go ahead.
Well, let's educate some more people, shall we, Barry? What do you say?
Sure, let's go ahead.
Okay, let's start with the term democracy, which by definition, democracy is ruled by the majority. So let's start there, okay? Because that is the term that's being thrown out every single day by these liars, by these dictators, by these authoritarians. We're here to save democracy. Now, you tell me something here. Because Canada was formed as a constitutional monarchy, no democracy, constitutional monarchy, king and queen rule, period. That's how we were set up. It's changed over the years. We all know that. It's not that anymore. Certainly not democracy. When was the last time we had a referendum where the majority got to say something about a major issue for this country? Never would be the right answer.
Yep.
As far as I know. I never heard of one, not in my lifetime. Did you ever get one, Barry?
No, I've never heard of one.
So in my lifetime, it's never, never. Listen, everybody, never. If it's a democracy, it's ruled by the majority, by definition. So we're a constitutional monarchy. That's the way we're set up. We are now sort of this global corporate fascist dictatorship type of thing, whatever you want to call it, communism, fascism, all these terms are thrown out just to get everyone confused. Oh, the left, they're okay, but the far right, they're not okay. Like, just give me a frickin' break. Dictators are not okay. Tyrants are not okay. These people are all not okay. Never mind the left-right bullshit. Pardon my language. Here's the other thing. America is a republic. And what do they throw around in America all the time? We're here to save the democracy. There's no democracy in America as well. But they always throw that term around. So that's number one. Let's learn that. Let's just, when you hear that, start to cringe and realize that they're lying to you right off the top. Number two, because we don't have a say as a majority. We're currently ruled by a minority, and it's run like a complete corporate dictatorship with the majority silenced through censorship and media allegiance to their paychecks that are coming from government. The government is paying all the media to tell you what you should believe, right? So we have elitist sellouts who worship power and money over everything, and that's where it's gone. There's no respect for humanity as soulless entities only. Look down on the general population as fodder for everything that falls into their hunger and lust for complete control. Now, imagine the halls of power. Just for once, think about this. You've got all these universities where all the elites send their kids. They have the money, the private schools. I saw it when I was young. Some friends of mine had kids in these private schools in Switzerland. It's crazy. But think about their secrets. Most of them have these secret societies, especially in the upper universities that cost you 50 grand to get in and all this kind of stuff. And you have to know somebody who knows somebody in power to get in, the Harvards and all of these, right? You got to be connected or you don't get in. Their secret societies transcend into the political and industrial arena to determine who gets what, who gets a share of the pie. Think in terms of something outside your realm of consciousness, something outside of what you conceive to be real. When the October crisis happened in Canada, 1969-70, people were led to believe that there's an entity in Quebec that wants complete separation. There's an entity from Quebec that wants to keep us all together. Now, just think about that. Do you think those two forces were really enemies? Do you think that René Lévesque and Pierre Trudeau were against each other? Or do you think that this was a controlled plan to show who's really in control? Quebec showed their power right there, right in the face of every Canadian. And every Canadian still kept paying their taxes into Quebec. And every Western province continued to be colonized by the Laurentian elite. That's what's happened in Canada. There's no two ways around it. So there's no respect for humanity in this transition that we're going through, as soulless entities only look down on the general population, like I said. Now, We are only shown the exterior that they want us to see. Let's say you just watched a video of the World Economic Forum and some guy is standing up against them at the forum and he's rah-rah and you people, you know, you're looking down on everybody and you shouldn't be doing it, blah, blah, blah. It's all part of the game. It's all part of the machinations. They've been doing it forever. Just look at the indigenous situation in the country of Canada. Ever since I was a boy, the issue was always getting clean drinking water to those people living way up north. It's always been a problem. And you're here to tell me that in the age of all this technology, all the billions that have been thrown into it, there's still communities that don't have clean drinking water. And you're going to tell me that that's just, oh, it's just things just happened and we put money in, but it failed here, it failed there. And yet they have all the experts all the time. When does the money stop and new experts come in that actually fix the damn problem? So anyways, I'm getting off the track. Meanwhile, like I said, we're only showing the exterior of stuff. While they throw their puppets out there screaming transparency and we're here to save this false democracy that we're screaming about that you don't have. Freedom, as symbolized by the growing global trucker movement, farmer movement, all of that in Europe now is on the table. Now, if we truly had rule by the majority, which is the definition of democracy, going back to the start of this conversation, referendum would be on the table for every major decision that affects our society, every, because it's ruled by the majority. So the majority say, no, we don't want to trade with that country. We don't want to do this. We don't want whatever. So we rule majority. That's democracy, right? But we don't have it. Now, here's the thing. But Katie Telford of the PMO said that she just had to make a phone call and she can get a positive story put out there for the citizens to buy and regurgitate on whatever policy they throw out there. Right now, you tell me that's a democracy. Are you kidding? That's what they want to save, right? They don't want to save democracy. That's what they want to save. They want to save the fact that they've got complete control, fooling you into thinking that that's democracy. Just look at it right now. We have a government that's a minority government, and they have more control than I've ever seen a majority government take in all the motions that they passed, in all the illegal activities they're involved in. They can pass an Emergency Measures Act. The Supreme Court can say, you're doing this against the law. It's illegal to do this to your citizens. And they sit back and say, well, we're going to appeal it. You know why they can appeal it? Because that's not their frickin' money. They're using taxpayer money and laughing and saying, we were here to save Canadians. The Supreme Court got it all wrong because it's not their money. They're using our money because the Supreme Court said they were wrong, so they can laugh it off and they can peel for the next 20 freaking years because the Bar Association is their friend. Half of them belong to the Bar Association. So voila, what does it mean? It means another taxpayer faucet that is turned on and it ain't going to be turned off for a long freaking time because they can appeal and appeal and appeal and they don't give a rat's ass about what happens. Because even if they lose, they'll still smile and smirk and say, here you go, Klaus. Have we done right by the World Economic Forum? Canadians be damned. Do you think they care about Canadians? Do you think these people care about Americans? They don't. It's all about insider trading, getting rich for themselves, getting their own island, buying a bunker for $100 million in Hawaii so they can hide. Not from what they feel is coming from some kind of war, but they know the people are going to come after them. The people are coming because the people are rising up all over the world. The propaganda of the last few decades through a morally and otherwise mentally bankrupt media machine have large numbers completely unprepared for what's to come, and they are totally blind to this deception. You are whatever adjective of the day that scores points with the delusional normies, hypnotized beyond repair by television programming. Many people now are beyond reproach, as programming is complete in a lot of areas. The Black Mirror used for decades by Hollywood and elitist global billionaires who now also control social media entities, are aligned with eugenicists for a global control mechanism that favors less than a billion population for the planet. And that's a reality. That's a reality still beyond the grasp of those poisoned minds compliant to any government mandate that favors them not having to make a decision on their own fate. And so MAID becomes popular, and the growth of the eugenicist movement enjoys massive growth. And that's where I want to go next, Barry, if we can, but go ahead.
I wanted to get into talking about MATS, the MAID's program in Canada, the expansion, how they're normalizing it now. It's absolute insanity. We're a society, as a civilized society, a society that's supposed to care about their fellow human beings, is allowing these, what was the numbers last year? I think 34,000. I believe 50, I think it was 40,000?
50.
Last year.
50,000 last year.
Okay.
That's what I heard. Okay, let's call it 40.
Yeah, but still, that's insanity. 40,000 Canadians were taking their lives with the hand of the government in their pockets. I mean, what have we come to as a society? I thought we were supposed to care about each other. We're supposed to want life to flourish. And here we are allowing people that have mental handicaps to go in and get their lives snuffed out. It's really, really sad.
But it's increasing. I saw a video this past week. And there's a story that came out of, I forget where it was. I really haven't slept the last 4 days since I saw it. There was a mother and a boy were in a drugstore, and apparently the mother was really upset. And I forget what she was in there to get, but apparently they relayed the story that the daughter, the young boy that was with the mother, his older sister, she was 13, she had cancer. And they were looking for treatments and all this kind of stuff. Now, like I said, I forget where this was, but I obviously it's in Canada because it was through the MAID program. But the people at the hospital, they had the girl in the hospital. They got her to sign a consent form without the parents. She was 13 years old, Barry, and they killed her in 2 days. They killed her without the parents knowing. She's 13. Wow. This is how it's gotten. This is how bad it's gotten in this damn country. Are you kidding? I saw that. I'm welling up right now. The tears are starting to come, Barry. How did we, you and me, we worked our asses off in this country. How did this happen? You're going to take our children without our consent and kill them? Because it's too expensive to fix them up? And this is the whole fable of free healthcare and, oh, it's so great in Canada. Are you kidding? You got to wait months to see a doctor. I know people who don't have a doctor, can't find a doctor. The doctors are leaving. Now they're bringing in people who think they're doctors, pretend they're doctors, and they don't even doctor you anymore. It doesn't matter, right? I my friend, when the whole pandemic started, was dying to see his mother in a home, couldn't see her for the first year till he took the jab. Then they still wouldn't let him see her, and because he took the jab, went back into fourth remission cancer, ended up killing himself as well, never got to hug his mother at all, died without getting to hug her, could only see her through.
So this child, this 13 year old, had cancer.
She had cancer. I'm not sure what kind of cancer it was. But, you know, we're talking about a 13-year-old who's not allowed to drink, not allowed to drive, but allowed to sign a form that ends her life.
How fucked up is that?
This is our country. This is Canada. And there's still people sitting on the couch. And it's just unbelievable. The destruction of all that is good is so evident, but the programming has everybody glued on the couch, still believing a world full of lies. And as long as the newscaster has good hair and looks good and it's a good set, they believe everything that's that's thrown at them. And any stories like mine and yours, and we're still on the fringe. I mean, I see people that I start talking about the tainted blood scandal, they don't even want to hear about it. They tried to kill my wife in the 80s, for God's sakes. What the hell do you people need to hear? What do you need to hear? They just killed a 13-year-old girl. What do you need to hear?
I'd like to know where that 13-year-old girl was, which province she was located in. I'd like to follow up on that a little bit.
I'll try to find the link.
That's sad.
It was on...
That is so sad.
Barry, I it's been haunting me since I saw the story. It's been haunting me. How did we get to this country? It's insane. And it's getting worse by the day. They deny everything. The arrogance of Freeland and Trudeau is just hitting the freaking roof. Gibo, the notion that Tucker Carlson would speak in Calgary and Edmonton is just beyond belief. That fascist right-wing Nazi baby killer. What the hell is he doing in our country? See how Alberta has lost touch with the rest of the world? They've allowed freedom of speech.
Oh, man, they're losing their shit over Tucker Carlson being in Canada. They're losing their poop over it. Because he's speaking the truth. And there was so many people that came out to listen to him talk. Did you get a chance to go and talk, listen to him?
I couldn't afford to go, Barry. I live south. I couldn't afford to go. I can't afford anything anymore. This country's stolen everything from me. We worked our asses off. They stole my 50 acres back east. I couldn't keep the ranch with that green energy movement. You had to follow every guideline. I have a perfectly good steel oil tank at my house. Perfectly good. Right?
Yeah.
I painted it every couple of years, kept the rust off and no problem. They come along and say, we're not going to deliver any more oil to your place unless you put in this plastic recycled oil tank that cost me $4,000. Are you kidding? This was just after I retired. Yeah, now we're going to take your land, buddy. I had three pieces of property. I was getting tax bills for three properties back east. And guess what? Unbeknownst to me, even though I was getting three tax bills every year, they took all the severances away, melded it into one, and said, nope, you can't build any more houses on your 50 acres of land because we wouldn't want your sons growing up with you. Green Energy and Economy Act. People forgot that part of it. The Green Energy and Economy Act that has cost Ontario billions of dollars, billions of manufacturing jobs, billions of dollars in farming, billions of dollars in waste of government services that don't exist. Now, you tell me this. Why do we have some of the highest tax rates in the world, yet when I want one of the services I pay taxes for, I still have to fucking pay for it? I got to go to the license bureau and buy my license, but my taxes are paying for the fucking license bureau, aren't they? And they get to have a pension. And I'm so glad that the government gave me a raise this year. Guess what, Barry? I got $460 raise this year. Wow. They just elected themselves $8,200 to $16,400 a year raise while they gave us seniors here a $41 a month raise. That's what I got.
$41 on my CPP. Yeah. I said, what am I supposed to do with this? Am I supposed to do with $41? Well, I get $1,107 a month to live on.
You can buy a coffee at Starbucks for $41, right? Special latte.
Yeah.
Extra cream. Extra liberal tears. Thank you very much.
So where do we go from here, Jürgen? What do you think is going to happen this year in Canada? Do you think the shit is going to hit the fan? Because I've got a feeling the shit's going to hit the fan this year. What do you think?
I'm in agreement. It has to because of Trump. The election is this year, right? So they have to go full ballistic. They cannot let him get into power because they know it's game over. They already feel that it's game over because they see the populism rising, not only here, but the farmers in Holland, Germany, all these places are going crazy, you know. And I think more people are starting to see something like this nutcase, E. Jean Carroll, getting $82 million in a settlement case against Trump, when she's probably the last chick he'd ever look at. Even if he was on a deserted island with her, he probably wouldn't want to bang her. Who the hell would? She's one of the, like, if you've seen videos of her in her backyard with her artsy fartsy painting her trees and trying to pretend there's a creek running through so she can paint her lawn and bullshit like that. Loonies, lefties, leftist lunatics. And yet this lady was funded by the same people that are funding the prosecutors and judges that are going after Trump in court. Right. So they declared Trump guilty at the start before the trial even started. And if people can't see that for what it is, the lack of justice and the bias that is involved here, then I pray for us, because it's so blatant. If you can't see it, then you're an idiot. And there's
I don't know what they're going to do to try and stop the election, but I think they're going to try and stop the election. I think a war at that particular time would serve their means very, very well. So be prepared for a war, because a war would thwart the election in the United States, or at least postpone it. And I see that as part of their possible playbook right now. What do you think?
That's a distinct possibility, unless there are forces in place that can prevent it. But I don't see at this point how they can prevent it. Look what has happened in the last couple of years. The war in Ukraine, the Gaza, it's just, and all of it is sort of escalating, right? And if you look at Bible prophecies, when Russia and Iran and China make alliances, then the world is in trouble. And so you've seen that those alliances are forming. You've got new financial systems coming. And I fear that people are not going to be ready for that aspect, which is probably the largest aspect of all of this, is that the financial system is going to crash. You can't just keep printing money forever and expect a system to hold up. It doesn't work. It can't work. It's impossible. Yep. We now have a notion that the people that are to blame for the climate crisis that we're in, because we're getting warmer and able to grow more of our own food, it's a crisis for them because they won't have control. That's the problem with climate change and climate control, because if the earth does warm up, we all have just think of Canada, the lush vegetation we'd be able to have here if the carbon levels went up. They can't have that. So we are going to experience more climate alarmism, and I think they're going to be using that. They're using it already to take our money by with the carbon taxes. When you think of the hypocrisy and the absolute lunacy, when the country on the North American continent that has the most trees and the most greenery is the only one that pays a carbon tax. And again, it's a situation where it is so right in your face. How are we supposed to, if it's all true, and the notion that these carbon taxes will help clean the planet and clean the air and all this bullshit, right? If it's so true, why doesn't America, why doesn't Mexico, why don't they charge a carbon tax? Why aren't they charging? And why aren't sea levels rising like they said 50 years ago? Like they told us, remember when we were growing up, Barry, there's going to be an ice age, a new ice age. It changes every decade, well, right?
That was before or after the acid rain threat.
The pollution crisis.
Acid rain was first, and we were going to acidify all the rivers and rivers, and boy, we were headed for a disaster. Never happened. Everything they've called for in the last 50 years, none of them have happened. None of them. Y2K, fuck, a joke. Everything they call and predict is a joke. But the carbon tax, you know, that's something that absolutely drives me insane, that we as Canadians are taking this up the butt. We should be telling the government in a unified voice across this country to shove that carbon tax right up their yin yang. We produce 1.5% of the carbon that is responsible on the whole planet. The planet concentration of CO2 is 400 parts per million right now as we speak. Well, at 200 parts per million, plant life stops growing on the planet. We're actually in a situation where the planet needs more carbon, not less. And they've turned that around. When I went to school, I was taught that carbon was the essential growing element of plants. the carbon dioxide was taken in, oxygen was expelled by our plants in the growth cycle. At nighttime, it's reversed. At nighttime, they take in oxygen and put out CO2. But when the plant's alive and in the day stages, that's the normal process. And they've taken that totally away from us. What happened to understanding the basic chemistry of how plants live on this planet, and what we're doing by taking CO2 out of the planet, the atmosphere, we're actually slowing down the growth rate. And it's not pretty. It's continuing to decline. So we've got to educate people. What we have is a problem of education. That's what we have. Period.
Well, education is huge. I mean, it's the core of all of the misunderstanding, obfuscation, and omissions that they're allowed to get away with. Because if you don't tell people true historical facts, then people are going to be blinded by lies and misdirection. And that's what's happening today. You see it everywhere. There are so many lies. I go back, and I had this discussion on another program I was on earlier in the week. We talked about it privately earlier, Barry. When I was on the Fakeologist show, it was based on the German-Canadian experience. And I was on a show with another Jürgen, which is kind of crazy, which was good because we relayed for 2 hours what the Canadian-German experience is. The fact that we came to this country and because of the situation we were put in, that the world hated us, we were indebted to be slaves. The guilt laid upon us exceeds any white guilt you might feel for feeling privileged, whatever, all that crap, right? I had that argument once with a social justice warrior. We're talking about white privilege. And I said, try being a white German kid wearing his lederhosen and going to school, not knowing one word of English, and trying to get home without getting beaten up. Try that for guilt. Try that for privilege. Right? You can take your white guilt. Now pour the fact that we were hated by the planet. And that's what they did. They took the Japanese, which were industrious, hardworking people. They took the Germans, which had more inventions up to that point than just about any other people on the planet, and all good quality products. They took them, those two countries, and decided those are the two that we need to diminish because they're coming up with stuff that's way too good for the human population to exceed our limit of eugenics, because eugenics has been on the table for hundreds of years. They want to control how many people are here. Those in power, they believe they can plug themselves into machines at one point coming up, if they haven't already, some of them. Rockefeller had, what, 7 heart transplants before he passed away, allegedly? That kind of thing, right? So their emphasis on that exceeds anything else. And so how do you get that? You get that only through power, control, money. So you make sure you rob the people of their money and their ability to speak at the level they do when they have the voice of mass media. And now with the voice of social media, they have it even better, because now on the internet, they can spread whatever they want because the minions there work with the governments, right? You take the fact that Dinkleberry at Facebook there, Zuckerberg, what did he spend? $200 million in Wisconsin to ensure a liberal vote or a Biden vote, whatever it was that he spent there. So you've got these powers that be with all the money, building bunkers, affecting the political process, buying politicians, corporate grifters that are tearing apart the family business structure. Every obstacle is put in the way to stop you from starting a business. That kind of thing is happening right now, and it's up to all of us to step up to it and say, you know what, we're not taking this shit anymore. You know, you stole my property once. Like my wife said when all this started as a victim of the tainted blood scandal, she said, when all this started with the plandemic, they tried to kill me once. I'm not giving them the chance to do it again. Simple. I'm not going to believe a word they say. And she was right all along, 100%. And one of the proudest accomplishments in my life is that I've got a family that's totally together. There isn't one child in the family, grandchild, anybody That's against what we're doing. We're against all it. We're not compliant. We're not complying, all of us. I know friends whose families have broken apart because of this bullshit. And the government has done it. The people in power have done it to us. And instead of us shooting sideways at each other, and here's the thing I talked about with the other Jürgen. I want to make a movie. I've been trying to get in touch with Mel Gibson. I don't know how to do it, but I've got an idea for a script from the Second World War. And it's about a 17-year-old German boy like my dad and a 17-year-old boy from Saskatchewan and mirroring the lives of both of them and both of them being told by their governments that that other boy over there, he's the bad guy and you need to shoot him. And the moral of the story will be you don't shoot sideways. You start shooting up. And that's my movie that I want to make. We talked about that program because the vilification of the German people, because I don't know, Barry, do you know another German voice out there other than mine that's speaking as loud as I have the last number of years? Do you know any? And that's
I can't say I do, Jürgen.
And that's what I mean. And yet they're the largest immigration population on the North American planet. They're 1 in 5. Everybody thinks it's English, Irish or something. It's Germans. 1 in 5. Look it up.
Yeah.
Trying to change that.
I didn't know that.
They're trying to change that dynamic because, well, yeah. I mean, and we had to get out of Germany, didn't we? Right? Who the hell wanted to stay there? My mother's village was getting overrun by the occupiers and they got away with whatever they wanted to because to the victor go the spoils. We talked about that. Nobody ever talks about what happened to the German people after the war. Does anybody give a crap? Nobody gives a crap that my mom was raped, her sister was raped. They used to come to the farm and demand food. And I told a story on that show about how one time my dad and my mom's brother, my uncle, they were at the farm together with my mom and my oma, and my opa was dead. He got killed in the war. And a couple of my uncles there. But long story short, the French and Algerians were occupying that particular area. They came in on a Sunday. I don't know what time it was, but they demanded a Le Pen dinner, a rabbit dinner. They knew that my grandparents had rabbits once in a while. Whenever they could get their hands on a couple of rabbits, they would keep them and, you know, have a supply of food for a while. So they demanded Le Pen. So my dad and my uncle just, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, let's go get them. Yeah, they had to bend over and say, oh, yeah, they had to. Yeah, you had to hear the stories from the way my dad would tell us, the way they had to bend over to these weak little men boys, like boy men. And they had to take it because they had lost and the consequences were severe if you didn't listen. Like they would take the women in front of them and do stuff to them if they didn't listen. So, and this is the allies we're talking about, all the good guys, you know, we're just the good guys. Everybody on this side is an angel. So my dad and my uncle went into the barn. They got one of the barn cats and skilled it, killed it and skinned it and fed it to the occupiers with some potatoes, I guess. And at the end of the meal, they're all saying, oh, c'est le meilleur Le Pen. That's the best rabbit they ever had. It was a freaking barn cat. But that's the kind of thing that they had to put up with. And that's why in 1955, I mean, my parents, you know, they went through a lot of trauma, the 10 years between the end of the war and their getting out of Germany, because it was kind of difficult. Germany wasn't, or Canada and a lot of the Western world wasn't accepting Germans. They had a hard time. My great uncle kind of paved the way. In 51, he came over. And because he was a baker and they needed people to be able to cook proper food, he started the first delicatessen in Ottawa. Actually, it was called the Bronson Bakery. It was the first deli in Ottawa. It was right on Bronson Avenue, a main artery downtown. And he ended up, his son became a psychiatrist. His other son was a meteorologist, had a very successful business. It became a huge bakery. Long story short, he sponsored my dad in 55, but my dad had to be sponsored to get here. He had to make sure he had a job waiting for him. He had to make sure that, he was going to go to a place they designated at the time. They said, yeah, we got a spot in Ottawa for his particular skill as a cabinet maker and carpenter and auto mechanic and tinsmith. That's my dad had four trades. So he was able to build a house on his own. He could wire it. He could plumb it. He could take a car apart, the engine, everything, all of it. You name it, he could do it. He was that good, that proficient at everything. He would build boats in the backyard, canoes, stuff like that in his spare time, because he never had spare time, because everything was a job. Everything was in relation to trying to get ahead and live a dream outside of the nightmare that was the Second World War that killed everybody, killed his father, killed his mother's spirit because his mother hated him for surviving. And basically on that hated us as grandchildren because we are the spawn of the boy that she hates because he lived and her husband didn't. So there's a lot of tales to tell about the war too, and about documentaries that I watched with my parents that were lies in the late 50s, early 60s. One particular that had my dad's face turn pale and white. And that, Barry, I'll tell you, people have no idea. No idea. When I saw Dr. Ritchie, for example, after I gave a speech, because my wife was injected with the tainted blood, I gave a speech. She was there in tears, and she invited me to be there at the institute. I went there, and just the thought that people in control of massive amounts of people would say and think that this poison blood doesn't need to be cleaned, we can just give it to our citizens. That extent, that level of evil is just beyond comprehension. And that's why in my lifetime, people have avoided the conversation and don't even want to talk about it. Yet I had to live it with my wife. So there, the difference between living it and not even want to talk about it is such a vast difference in how you look at the world and how you see things more clearly. When I had 19 people rob my store, all were found guilty and not a single one went to jail or had to pay me back for losing a family business of 30 years. Not a nickel came back to me. That proved to me that we have a very faulty judicial system, legal system, whatever kind of system it is now. It's a joke. It's a bar association that is totally corrupted by their friendship with the government, government entities. I've sat at tables with tables full of lawyers. I asked one table full of lawyers one time when I was representing Dr. Ritchie in Ottawa with her alma mater of about 12 successful lawyers from different firms across the country. I asked them one question at this one meeting. I said, can any of you lawyers here tell me who in Canada stands up for the English language the way you have so many representatives that stand up for the French language, and the notion that this is a bilingual country is such a huge lie, when if you took the province of Quebec out of the picture, only 4% of the population deemed themselves to be French speakers. You know what the response was, Barry? The entire bar, every single one of them. Why are you asking that? We're a bilingual country. It's legislated into law. No questioning the reality, no questioning the numbers. And that's why my mission when I moved to Alberta was to get Alberta to declare English the official language of this province, because it will serve two purposes. Number one, it will tell the people of Alberta, you know what, no matter what Trudeau does and Ottawa does, we're going to maintain our area of communication just like the French have. That's the only language protected in this country right now. They don't give a crap about English. They hate the English. Get it through your head. All you English speakers out there, when are you going to stand up for your language like I have my entire freaking life? And people have laughed at me. No one's donated a dime to my cause. And yet here, when you think about it, right? How many times have you been told by the federal government, we need another $5 billion to protect both official languages? Guess what? Every nickel, except for a few hundred thousand, goes to Quebec and French language zealots that want to increase the use of French language in Western Canada And the only thing that has stopped them this last couple of years is Tamara Leach, because she's a Métis. They were going to use the Métis to extend more French. So I've told Danielle Smith, I've told my local rep, and I said, if we don't declare English the official language, and guess what, Barry? I've made headway. Here's what's happened. Number one, about 6 months ago, our health minister gave a little thing about the health situation and all that kind of stuff. Danielle Smith was there. French reporter asked him a couple of questions in French. He answered in French, and then Danielle Smith went up to him, tapped him on the shoulder, and said, now answer those questions in English, because that's what we speak here in Alberta. You never heard a politician say anything close to that, ever, ever. Since then, another minister or another lady, that were, I'm not sure what she was, but I watched the video, it was awesome. She was talking about how, why is Quebec allowed to be independent? Why are they allowed to be nationalistic? Why are they allowed to have their language protected and we're not, and stuff like that? And I'm just sitting there in my chair, I'm looking at my wife and I'm going, mission accomplished. I think Dr. Ritchie would be proud of me. I've been working on this for almost for 6 years now since I moved to Alberta. And finally, finally, people are talking about protecting our language. I've made a point, I especially made this point to our representative here, our new UCP rep, Justin Wright. I told him at a meeting we had, I said, listen, the English language used to be, when I was in business, the number one language of business by a long shot globally. Now it's number three. Do you even know that? Because Mandarin and Arabic have taken over. English is now number three. And you've got a country here that says we're bilingual and all the money goes to the French language. Guess who's being sacrificed? Think about it. Your culture begins with communication. You don't have a culture if you don't have communication. I don't care if it's hand signs or whatever it is that you and all your people communicate with. If you don't have communication, you're done. And they don't care, because they're telling all the new irregulars they don't have to learn English or French. They don't give a shit. They're covered. We're not. We're a multicultural country. The nation of Quebec controls Canada. People better get used to that, because there's no power in the House of Commons anymore. In 1976, Pierre Elliott Trudeau passed over 3,000 orders in council that transferred all the power to the Prime Minister's office. And every Prime Minister since then hasn't said a word, because they love the power. Wake up, everybody. 1976, the 200-year anniversary of the notion of your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was Pierre Elliott Trudeau's middle finger to the notion that you have a right to life. And America and their constitution, which is the only thing that has saved us from becoming a communist hellhole, their constitution and our proximity, because every one of our cities is within sniffing distance of the American success story. Yes. And we feign and pretend that we're better, especially all the leaders we've had. Oh, America. They have no culture. They have no joie de vivre. When you hear them talk, and I've heard them talk, because when you live in Ottawa and you're an English speaker first, but you know how to understand French and you know how to speak it a bit, but the understanding is key. Because now you go into these places in Ottawa where we had contracts, and you can hear them speaking in French when they think you don't know it. And you can hear the vitriol, and you can hear the hatred that still exists in this country for anyone who speaks English. People here have no idea in the western part of Canada what it's like in Ottawa at that French border. No idea. Do you know now, if you don't speak French first, you can't get a job at McDonald's. They don't care about anything else but expanding their language and their culture. Do you think they give a crap about the English speakers? And that's why we need to push for us and our culture of entrepreneurship, the English language, the laws of the land, obeying the laws, not these hyperinflated mandates that we're running on, and all these commissions that come up with decisions that we think are laws and fool us. Bureaucracy overrun with its power. It's too much. At every level, we have too many off the trough, way too many, and not enough people feeding into it. And those of us that are feeding into it, if we don't arise with a vengeance, then we're in big, big trouble. But we have to. This year, like you said, Barry, I'm with you 100%. This, I call this the year of mass revelation. This is the year where you're going to hear things you don't want to hear, but it's reality, it's truth. You're not going to want to hear some things because it's ugly, like this 13-year-old getting killed. That's the ugliest story I've heard all year. That's the epitome of where we're at. We are killing 13-year-old kids without the consent of parents because we think it's the right thing to do. When a government gets to that point, and you still think you're living in a fucking democracy, give your head a shake. And I'm sorry for the language, but I just have to. There's no other way to describe that level of evil, that disgust, and the way it tears at your heartstrings. Anyone with decent, with a sense of decency, with a sense of compassion or empathy. Who are these people that make that decision, Barry? Who the hell is that? Are they getting paid? Hey, listen, 10 grand if you kill that kid. Is that what it is? Or, is it the fact that Canada is now the largest supplier of organs? Ah, yes, we need another heart a couple of months. Ah, yes.
We young need a ones, please. We need a young one. We need a young one. We
need a young one.
Imagine
a good
blood, preferably
virginal. Yeah, preferably virginal. We want that kind of blood as well. So suck that blood dry. Yep. We need that. A couple of good pair of eyes. What color are they? Oh, yeah, I've got a client in Switzerland looking for them.
The orders are already waiting for the parts.
A barrel of oil, Barry, can be $70, $80, $90, $100. A barrel of blood is $67,000. Think about it. Think about it.
That's a lot of money.
But you need to make
you
money
imagine what the parts off that. Imagine what the parts off that 13-year-old girl are going to be worth.
Kidneys, liver, come on, lungs. Yeah, sure.
Man, oh man.
How easy is that, right?
What a sad state of affairs we are living in. Jürgen, we're down to the last minute. Believe it or not, that hour went by very quickly. It always does when we get talking. I love your passion. I love your input, man. And
thanks, Barry.
I'm going to have to let you go.
All right, mate. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk to you again.
Next time. We'll talk. We'll talk soon, Jürgen.
Ciao for now.
Bye for now.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be back in minutes with Doug Forrest.
You. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids, dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out. Up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B. It's the Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, welcome back, second hour, folks, and always good to have Jürgen in. Thanks again, Jürgen, for joining me. I am joined by Doug Forrest for the second hour. Anybody who's listened to me talk in the last 3-4 years has heard Doug talk many times on my show. Always brings good stuff to the table. How are you doing, Mr. Forrest?
I'm doing great, thank you, Barry, and it's nice to be back, and I always enjoy coming and having a good chat with you in the afternoons. Anyway, so what's up for today?
Well, we're going to have that lady in for the second half hour.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
Rosalind Bird from the new Conservative Party of British Columbia. She's one of the founders. Wonderful.
Yeah,
she just
hooked up with me on Skype, so we'll get her in for the second half hour, but. I like to start my show off with your pet peeve. So, Doug, what is the thing that's bugging you the most? Of all the things that are bugging you in our current state of affairs in Canada, what's bugging you the most?
Well, I went and saw Tucker Carlson here speak in Edmonton the other day, which is he's actually very good. And he spoke about knowing Chrystia Freeland before she was in politics. She was a journalist in Washington, D.C., and he got to meet her on several occasions. And his opinion of her was that, you know, she's not very bright, and she walks around with a chip on her shoulder. Now that she's in politics, that she can do no wrong. It's as if she's, Jesus Christ reincarnated, for lack of a better term. And so, yeah. And what she did the other day with that that Dave Menzies, the reporter from Rebel News, and actually allowed her RCMP detail to step into him and then blame him for assault on a police officer. I thought that was absolutely disgusting, that this woman needs to be held to account and brought up on charges for allowing something to happen like that. And the RCMP officer needs to be probably fired and his pension seized and a major apology come forward from not only the RCMP, but the federal government for Mr. David Menzies. I watched that and I thought, how low can these people go? So
yeah, that was absolute bullshit. I watched it many times. I watched it 3 or 4 times, and the conflict between David Menzies and the RCMP officer was initiated by the RCMP officer.
Oh, absolutely.
And if anything, it was a brush, and for him to do what he did is absolutely atrocious. It's Trudeau's henchmen is what those guys are, and they need to be called out, Doug.
And I've met David on several occasions, and the one thing I will say about David, as far as other interviewers go, he is a genuinely polite man. You know, he does not, you know, force his way in. He was so far away from Chrystia, you know, you could see that there was at least 6 to 7 feet between him and Chrystia while he was asking the question, to ensure that he didn't come into her walking path, right? And that's just David. David is one of those guys. He's a very nice man, but he also asks some very tough questions that people don't want to answer. And he's not scared to ask those questions either. Like I say, I've met him on several occasions when we were doing the rallies down at Queen's Park and down at Dundas Square. He used to come down. And then I met him when I was working with Chris on the campaign trail in Toronto. He came out to interview Chris at one of the barbecues we had. And once again, just genuine. He came up to me, said, "Doug, I'd love to have Chris come and do an interview," because he knew I was his campaign manager. And I arranged to have that done. I got Chris to do an exclusive with him. I thought it was well worth the effort. And he came to one of the debates that Chris was at, and it was an amazing. He spent, after Chris got off the stage, he spent at least 20 minutes interviewing him after the debate. I had nothing bad to say about Mr. Menzies. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Rebel News, but at the same time, they don't, you know, they have their foibles as well, but nothing upset me more than watching how that police officer literally stepped into him and then blamed him for assaulting him. I thought that was how absolutely low can you go? That police officer doesn't even deserve to have his badge. He should be stripped of his rank and stripped of his pension and fired and booted out the door for something like that. That is just. And Miss Freeland, oh my God, I can't believe just the way the people, like, she is the deputy prime minister and the finance minister, and she holds a degree.
And she sits on the board of directors for the World Economic Forum.
Well, but here's the other thing: she has a journalism degree from some, small little, I don't know where she got her degree from. But possibly out of a box of Cracker Jacks, for all I know. But she doesn't know what a spreadsheet looks like. So how could she be the finance minister if she can't read a spreadsheet? And she walks around with this arrogance. You ever meet a retarded person that thought they were so smart that they walked around with an arrogance, you're actually seeing that in her. I'm just amazed. Now, that was my pet peeve for the week. And I liked how Tucker brought that out in the little talk that he did on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I listened to Tucker talk, and boy, he sure hit it out of the park. He really did. We need more voices like that in Canada.
Well,
he's being listened to.
Here's the thing, and this is wonderful. Danielle Smith. So they did an interview down in Calgary with Danielle. And then in Edmonton, she came up to the podium and she spoke for about 10 or 12 minutes. And I thought, man, oh man, if we had politicians in British Columbia, Ontario, Manitoba, with a backbone like she has, we wouldn't be in the problems we have with this federal authority. And I really got my fingers crossed, because I've been working with the founders of the Conservative Party of British Columbia from their inception. I know Dominic very well. I've got to know Rosslyn quite well. I've only spoken to John a couple of times, but he seems like a really decent dude. And I've spoken to a number of the other people that are involved with them, Jordan and Wayne, et cetera, et cetera, from up in the northern parts of the territory, Colliery down in Kamloops, some people down in Vancouver and on Vancouver Island. And I'll tell you, these people, these are not politicians, and that's the beautiful part of this, is that these people are for the people. And I tell people this. I say, get off the couch, get out the door, and get involved. You know, the hero you're looking for is looking back at you every morning in the mirror. You're that hero. You have to. Yeah. And apathy is what got us here. Barry, apathy is what got us here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad part of this. Is like, maybe it'll go away if we just don't say anything too loud. It might just disappear. And the parasites that be love that, because that gives them free reign. And that's why they do what they do. Unfettered.
It's not gonna go away. It's only gonna get worse and worse and worse. And silence is consent, and we can't be silent anymore. We've got to stand up and scream at the top of our lungs. And if we did that as a universal voice, we'd be heard, Doug. That's what we need to do right now. We are in a pickle. I believe that 2024 will be a pivotal year
in
Canadian history. We either going to turn this around or we're going to bend to the knee. And I'm not into bending to the knee, buddy. So
yeah.
I'm going to fight this to the death, period. Go ahead.
Well, there's that old expression, you know, I'll die on my feet before I live on my knees as a slave.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing, and I've been on the road. I go back and forth across Canada 8 times in the last 4 years now, and I go down into the communities, and I work with people at a community level, at municipal level, and you know, we've got to get out and get. If you want to change things in your backyard, then you've got to start in your backyard. Well, what is your backyard? Well, that would be your school board, your municipal. Government or your city government or your town governance, et cetera, et cetera. But it's getting involved at that level that takes you to the next level and to the next level. When Chris called me to ask me if I wanted to go to Toronto with him to do the mayoral race, I thought it would be a really interesting experience to see what we can do. Because it's funny, I called Wayne and I said, hey, Wayne, guess what? Chris wants to go run for mayor in Toronto. You want to come with? And he goes, when are we leaving? Well, we knew that if we could run a non-political campaign and wake the 70% up, right, that we could win the election. And so that was the plan. And we executed it just beautifully, you know, with what Wayne was doing with the social media, what Chris was doing, you know, with the communities and going in and getting involved at that level. And it was a microcosm because it was only a city, right? But it was the premier city in Canada, Toronto, but it still was only a city. If you could take that and do that on a provincial level, okay, and come back. Now, they did that in Alberta with Danielle Smith. They actually got 60% of the people to go out and vote in Alberta. That's why Danielle Smith won. Okay, and she had the people, I give high praise to the people of Alberta that worked diligently getting out and doing the door knocking and working with the communities to get them out to vote for and get her in as government, right? I thought that was marvelous. But you guys in British Columbia, you guys have the same opportunity to take back what is yours. And I love Danielle for what she did when she challenged the courts last summer and won at the Supreme Court level on all the natural resources belonging to the province, belonging to the people with the province's management, and told the federal authorities to piss off. How cool is that? Well, you guys in British Columbia, you're sitting on hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of natural resources that actually belong to you, with the management of your government. Okay, but your government is a socialist. Well, let's call them what they are. They're communists, okay? The NDP is not a socialist organization. The NDP changed their name in the late 1950s from the Communist Party of British Columbia, the Communist Party of Canada, to the NDP. Right. Okay? Right. They never changed their platform. Their platform is still communist. And any vote for the NDP is a vote for communism and a vote against freedom of any kind. And so when you have these kinds of dictators, that they want to be dictators because they will do everything in their power to stop you from accessing the wealth that belongs to you. They will take that wealth and redirect it into their pockets and to their cronies' pockets to your detriment. And it's got to stop. And I believe that with this new party that when Roslyn comes on, I believe that these people are the right people to put into power for we the people of the province of British Columbia, to put the power back in our hands, the resources back in our hands, and to bring back an economy that will be booming under their leadership.
Yes. Absolutely. I'm just starting to follow the party, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And shame on me maybe for not following them up to this point, but I've read a few things, made statements by members of the party, and I really like the grassroots movement that I see happening with this Conservative Party of British Columbia.
And the beautiful.
So I'm gonna get them on here. I'm gonna do a show here. Maybe next week we can do a 2-hour show and I can get the head cheese in and a couple of the big cheeses, the organization, and we can really push it out there because we've got to get rid of the NDP in British Columbia. They are destroying this province at light speed.
Well, and the Libtard.
It's absolutely ludicrous what they're doing.
And the Liberal Party is working in cahoots with them. So, I mean, either one. You know, you're going to wind up with a socialist government. But we see now, okay, you look, I love what they did in Argentina with Milei, okay? And that guy is, I think he's a bit insane, to be honest with you. but no, I watched his interview with Tucker Carlson, which was a really good interview. But he's a little bit of a nutter. And now because he's pulled the pin on the grenade and thrown it in the room and run out and just let it blew up because he closed down, I think it was 11 ministries. It's the day he took office, he shut down like 11 ministries, which I thought was fantastic. Cut government. But now he's got this uprising with the communists down there. The communists are uprising against him because he's cutting all their benefits. And saying, nope, we ain't going to pay you anymore. And they're uprising. And the communists I'm speaking about are all the unions, okay, the unions down there. Because it was all graft as far as they were concerned, gravy for the boys. And, you know, and so, but they're now fighting back, attempting to fight back by going on strike And he's sitting back laughing because of the hundreds of millions of dollars that the government is saving when it's shut down. It's like, yeah, okay, stay on strike. Doesn't matter because we're just saving money because you're not paying anybody. But so you look at what happened in the Netherlands with Geert Wilders, okay, at that election. And they went at 37 seats they took. Holy moly, from something like 3 seats they had in the last election to over 30 seats now. It's amazing. So the people are waking up. Germany, all the farmers, you know, they're coming in, and now they've shut down the roads in Germany. Then in Italy, it spread to Italy and Spain and Portugal. And this is conservatism, okay? These are people that say, you know, enough is enough, right? And the big thing for Geert in Netherlands was the invasion, what he called the invasion of Islam.
Yeah.
And now he's going to put a referendum out for leaving the EU. And I think that's wonderful because it's up to the people to decide. It's not up to the governments and the non-elected officials at the EU, because these people are appointed and then they have edicts. And I think what's going on over there, I don't think we're going to see an EU probably within the next 2 years. I think it'll be gone. I think that whole experiment in fascism is coming to an end. Because it is fascism. The Maastricht Treaty, which was originally written by the Nazi Party or the National Socialists in Germany in 1943, it was written by the National Socialists. The Party of Hitler wrote the Maastricht Treaty in, I believe it was Strasbourg, Austria, in 1943.
Huh.
That's what created the EU.
Yeah.
Go figure. Holy crap. They didn't call it the Maastricht Treaty back then. They called it something else. But all they did was scratch out the name, what they originally called it, wrote Maastricht Treaty on it. And, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the world is changing, Barry, and it's changing a lot faster than Klausi over there in Austria, who you would eat bugs and own nothing and be happy, wants to see. I mean, even Billy Gates is getting scared. He is getting, you know, because it's starting to come back on him. People are starting to wake up. Did you see in Congress the other day, I think it was about two weeks ago now, maybe, where they had that doofus, what's his name? John Kerry. The climate czar, John Kerry, and the congressman is asking me, reading off all these facts, okay, all these facts about carbon dioxide, all this stuff, and he's reading these facts.
Yeah, yeah.
Kerry has the audacity, the absolute audacity, to say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. These experts have no clue, This is from the UN. This is from the NASA. They don't know what they're talking about. He says, I have 193 heads of government that we're pushing this through. And then the congressman cut him off because he was saying they are, and the congressman said, yeah, climate grifters. And I was like, yeah, because that shut Kerry up at that point. You're just a freaking grifter. Trying to push an agenda that is a fantasy, and you want to control the world by flying around on your private jet, taking your 4 SUVs from the airport into the hotel, and tell people that they have to cut back and take the bus and eat bugs while you eat filet and fly around on a private jet. Yeah, that ain't gonna fly.
Yeah, but that's what they expect us to buy. That's what they're feeding us. You look at everybody that attended the World Economic Forum meeting. I mean, how many private jets flew into?
Was it 140 or something? Well,
yeah, something like 140 or 100. I think the airport had a record day. They dealt with 100 and some odd planes in one day coming in and coming out, private jets.
Yeah.
And these are the people, like you said, that are telling us to eat insects. I mean, they built the second biggest, it is the biggest cricket factory in London, Ontario.
Yeah.
So they're producing lots of crickets, and they're ending up with our food. You got to look at your ingredients. You got to look at your ingredients now, Doug.
Yeah, I don't buy anything.
I don't have the list in front of me, but I have it on my computer, and it tells me what mainstream products are now putting insects in the foods that we're eating. Isn't that great, man?
Well, Doritos is number one.
I want to eat insects, huh?
Doritos is number one. They've now put crickets and mealworms and stuff. So if you eat Doritos, that's what you're eating. Welcome to 2024. No, I'm not kidding. But Doritos. But Doritos has been doing that now for about 2 years. Well, it's bad for you anyways. You shouldn't be eating that stuff in the first place. But everybody likes to have, once in a while you eat Doritos. But that's now what they've done for the last couple of years. They've stopped putting regular stuff in and started adding bugs. Ugh. Anyway.
How sick is that, man? How sick is that?
Well, at the end of the day,
The human body is not designed to ingest animals or crickets or bugs, man. Our bodies aren't designed to do that.
Well,
and they're changing our very structure of our body. Go ahead.
Well, no, you can eat some bugs, okay? And you do when you eat Heinz ketchup. They have so much rat feces per parts per million, so much insect cockroach parts per million, and stuff like that. When you eat those HP sauces and stuff like that, there's going to be bits and pieces of flies that come in, but they're only allowed certain parts per million, right? But at the end of the day, the human body can eat like certain types of insects. Crickets are not on the menu for the human body. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, crickets are not good for you. They carry a certain type of bacteria that actually can, over time, can kill you. And so it's all about killing you. This whole thing is about killing you. It's the idea of decarbonization. And John Kerry, 2 years ago, when asked, well, not even 2 years ago, it was 2022. Sorry, it was, so it would have been 2 years ago, probably next month. When asked, point blank, the carbon, so Mr. Kerry, decarbonization, what does that mean? Well, what we're looking to do is depopulate the planet. You're the carbon they'll want to that they're trying to get rid of. And he came out and said it. But he's 80-something years old and probably is as dementia, well, not quite as bad as dementia Biden, but getting there. And these people don't care. You look at how old they are. You know, you look at Klaus Schwab is 83. What's his name? Kerry is like 80. Nancy Pelosi is 82. They're all at the end of life. You know, this George Soros, he's just about 90 or something. End of life. So they don't, the stuff that they're putting in place, they're dead when it comes into fruition and people are starving. They don't care. This is why it's such a big push. But you look at all of them, a lot of the Congress and senators, late 70s, early 80s, and they're quite happy to, do decarbonization of the world, depopulation, because they're not going to be around for it. They know that at best, they're going to live maybe a 10 more years if they're lucky. You know, I don't think Pelosi's going to be around for much longer, or Biden, to be honest with you. They're both kind of at that point where the dementia has taken over so badly. I mean,
Biden is, it's hard to watch that guy.
Well,
it really is.
Pelosi was on camera the other day trying to defend Biden, and she did a worse job. She got lost, literally, in what she was trying to do. As you started stuff, I'm thinking, yeah, Nance, you got to stop taking vodka with your pills.
Yeah,
because they're all
they're all losing their flipping minds.
And that's what I'm saying. So it's the end of life for them. So they don't care. They push the depopulation into the young people. And that's the sad part of this, is that you get a lot of young people who bought into climate change, and they're now grifting, okay? Because they actually believe, oh no, you old people, you are bad, blah blah blah. Carbon dioxide is, and it's like, oh my God, can you, and they can't read. A lot of these people are graduating out of high school and they can't read or write. They're illiterate. Yeah. And yeah. they go to university and they get their degree from university, you know, that basket weaving degree that they paid $100,000 for. They can't read and write or do simple
crickets
math.
When they come out. They're crickets.
They
it's
really,
a joke.
It amazes me. I have a master's degree in basket weaving. Oh, how wonderful.
So listen, your friend that's going to join us, what's her name again? Excuse me?
Rosalind Bird.
Rosalind. Right. Well, I'm going to call her.
Cool. Let's get her on.
I'm going to add her to this call right now. And
perfect.
She answers.
Oh, she'll answer. You're going to love her. I love her. It's great people.
Yeah, I was talking to her earlier today.
There she is.
Hi.
Hello, Rosalind.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I have Doug Forsen. I have Doug Forsen sitting in the room with me. What is on your mind?
Well, there's a lot of things on my mind, actually.
Okay. Well, let's start with what your role is and who you are and why you're involved in the Conservative Party of British Columbia. Why don't we start with that? And a little explanation to the audience who you are.
Okay. Well, I am a veteran. I'm a wife. I'm a grandmother. And I am a concerned citizen. And all of those things combined have brought me to a path that was really quite unexpected. And that is to apply for and be nominated and be announced as a candidate for the Conservative Party of British Columbia. So BC now has a Conservative Party, which is very exciting because we've had two very predominant parties and the Green here, and we haven't had a Conservative representation or voice for a very, very long time. So I'm extremely excited about that and what the party's wanting to do in regards to bringing back some common sense to British Columbia and revitalize the province for its incredible residents.
Okay, you're not affiliated with the federal Conservative Party, correct?
We are not. We are completely separate. We do share the Conservative name. There are some policy pieces or ideas that overlap, of course. You know, quite passionate about reducing the carbon tax, as are we. But we are provincially focused, and we are not funded by the federal party at all. So, you know, there is some overlap, but it's not intentional. It's coincidental, and no, two completely separate parties dealing with completely different types of legislation and who it impacts.
Hey, what do you think of the primary, the number one and number two issues facing British Columbia right now?
Economy, of course. Even people that are significantly successful within their careers or they have dual incomes or whatever the case may be, I don't think there is a single person that you would find in BC that doesn't have a complaint about current cost of living. Whether it's the price of groceries, the price of gas, the price of tax, the price of housing. So I would say that is absolutely 100% the key issue. The second issue, that one's a little more challenging to sort of nail down because it really kind of depends on who you're talking about because we have some big, big issues. I would say the second issue that probably affects the greatest majority of BC residents and is talked about all the time is healthcare.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we have a very challenged healthcare system at the moment. We have a million people in British Columbia that don't have family doctors. We have huge wait lists and wait lines, whether it's to get into emergency, whether it's to, you know, get surgery, whether it's to see a specialist, all of those types of things. We have healthcare workers that want to come back to work that aren't able to. And we have a broken system that needs a lot of repair.
Don't forget that you guys have to worry. You got to look at Bill 36 that was put through to push the agenda of the bioweapon onto people.
Yep.
And that needs to be really looked at when you guys take power back and put it back into the hands of the people to reverse all of that and give people have to have choice. And the socialists love to say no because people can't make a good informed decision on their own. We need to make the choices for them. And I know that you guys are more for the people making their own choices and giving and getting out of their way to allow them to do that.
And Bill 36, which is the Healthcare Practitioners and Occupations Act, that piece of particular legislation, that doesn't give anybody choice. It doesn't give healthcare workers choice. It doesn't give patients choice. It is I don't believe it's a bill about choice. I don't even believe it's a bill about safety, which is how it got sold to the public and healthcare workers. That bill is about control.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is an extremely scary piece of legislation, and what it was initially intended to be and what it resulted in, they're so far apart.
Well, you know, it was 7 years in the making that they had to tie off a whole bunch of little loose ends to pull and pass little tiny pieces of legislation in order to pull this one together. It took them 7 years. So it's amazing. How they, you know, they were so embedded within. And this isn't done by the politicians. This is done by the unelected officials that are in office. And you'll see that when you take office and you become a head of a ministry, you've got a bunch of permanence people in there. And that's the people that will fight you for any change. And that's why, you know, I've said to other politicians that you need a backbone made of steel, because when you go in there, you're going to have to pink slip a lot of these people, and they're going to work so hard against you. And you're going to have to be able to figure out who's the good ones and who are the bad ones and start, you know, cleaning house the day you take office. But I know in your background, Roz, I know that because when you come out of the military and what you did and the accomplishments there, I don't think that's going to be a problem for you at all. As a matter of fact, I think the other elected officials are going to ask you to come and help them clean their offices as well. Oh, Lordy.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm actually, because I never ever thought I would actually be engaged with politics at this type of level, and it never ever occurred to me to ever run for any type of office. And, you know, I don't think I'm unique in that. In the candidates that have come forward and the individuals that are wanting to be candidates that have expressed, you know, interest in doing that, they are regular everyday people. We have doctors, we have nurses, we have engineers, we have lawyers, we have you know, very successful business owners that, you know, initiated a business when they were young and have grown that business, expanded that business, multiplied that business. But these are they're just regular individuals. They're the same thing I said at the beginning. You know, they're husbands, their wives, their parents, their grandparents. And they're looking around their province and they're literally saying, what is happening? Like, I can't think of anything. Healthcare, education, the economy, how we manage our resources, how we manage our corporate entities, whether it's ICBC or BC Ferries or whatever it happens to be. Like, there is nothing in this province that does not need some sort of overhaul or review or serious looking at. And it just makes me really question, how did we get here and how do we move forward from here and how do we make things better?
Years of complacency is how we got here. And, there's a lot of things that need to be repaired. Soji 123, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't believe in ideologies in any application of education, or any level of education for that matter, whether it's K to 12 or it's actually post-secondary. And I think we have a lot of focus currently in the education system on things that shouldn't be, that aren't unimportant, but that shouldn't be pushed. So Ideologies are not something that should be in the school system, and school systems need to be concentrating on finding creative solutions and mechanisms to make those students successful. So when you have a high school students across the province that are graduating that need to do upgrading in order to qualify for application to post-secondary school, we've failed.
Right.
When you have high school graduates that, you know, don't know how to write, do cursory writing, they aren't able to complete math problems or look at a tape measure and figure out, you know, one application or one measurement to the next. You know, they have trouble reading, writing. We've got a big problem, because how do you grow a prosperous province when the generations that are coming, that are moving up the line, aren't able to take over technical or, you know, scientific or engineering or any type of, you know, post-secondary education sort of industry? We're in big trouble. So we need to refocus completely our education. I would actually like to see a new learning model. I would like to see kids being taught how to think, not what to think. And there's way too much of that.
Yeah, no kidding. But I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt here, Barry. That comes down to this.
No, go ahead, Doug.
So
go ahead.
I was born and raised in British Columbia. I'm a BC boy, and I grew up in the 60s and the 70s in a little place called North Vancouver. And, you know, gone to school there, and they did teach critical thinking at the time. But what's happened is, with the socialist governments that we've had, both the Liberal, the NDP, and the what do they call those guys? Social credit governments and so forth. What's being built is a bureaucracy. Okay. And once a bureaucracy starts, okay, it just continues. It's like cancer. It continues to grow and grow and grow. And pretty much over time, you know, you get what you pay for, as they say, with the bureaucracy. And I tell you a quick, funny story. I was hired for 3 months at a hospital closure in BC to do a transition. And I said, okay, great, fine. So in 3 months, this hospital was closed, 7 stories. And over a three-month period, they turned the hospital. And by the time I was done after 3 months, they had 4 floors of the closed hospital all converted to office space for bureaucracy. By Christmas of that year, that entire hospital was under conversion to office space for bureaucracy. It just amazed me that they laid off like the employees to close the hospital, right? And you know, the general workers, et cetera, and a bunch of nurses and stuff had to were displaced. And then they hired all these administrators. Now, 7 floors turned into offices. There was like 3,500 new people brought in, all administration.
Okay.
Nothing to do with the hospital at all. Nothing to do with healthcare of the patients. It was all administration. So that's what bureaucracy is. And that's what's destroying a healthcare system that takes care of a patient, a school system that takes care of a student and ensures that they can read, write, and do basic math principles when they graduate. So that's the sad part. Like I said, I'll go back to before you joined us, Rosalind, I was talking about Milei down in Argentina, and the first thing he did was close 11 ministries. And let the people, you're gone. And the big kickback today, now that all the unions are on strike, and he's like happy as hell because he's not paying anybody. And he's saving the government hundreds of millions of dollars. It's great. It's working.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say about bureaucracy and administration, because I think it's very heavy in the school system also, which was what started that. You know, that you had asked me about education. And here up in the riding that I'm hoping to represent, which is Prince George Valemont, it's a very large geographical riding, and there are schools in my riding that are being threatened in regards to closures because the student base is reducing. And when you, it's interesting that you have a very heavy administrative top load and heavy bureaucracy. And within that heavy bureaucracy and administration, you can't seem to find resources for something as simple as dyslexic students. I mean, we've had dyslexic students in the school system for decades and decades and decades. And there are literally here in Prince George, which we have a population of 100,000, including, you know, outlining immediate communities. And all of those resources are online or distance. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And, you know, we're looking at closing schools in smaller communities, or, you know, it's something that administration is looking at. But we had no problem managing to find interesting teaching mechanisms during COVID. So why wouldn't we look at those mechanisms and, you know, try and benefit students with that creativity outside of lockdowns? So, you know, when you have as many people employed as the system, as education, as healthcare does, I'm a little confused why we can't come up with solutions and new mechanisms in order to provide the care and the education systems that, you know, BC residents deserve and are paying for.
Because it goes against their bureaucracy. So rather than find a solution, because they're not there to find solutions, they're there to increase the problems, because that gives them a job. Oh, well, we have a problem. We're going to have to set up a committee. Oh, that committee is going to need an office. Okay, that there's the head of that committee. Well, that committee, that head person is going to need a helper or an assistant. Well, that assistant, we're going to make her the head of administration for that committee. And then it grows and it continues to grow. And for one committee that we're going to hire 10 people to figure out the solution to a problem turns into 200 under administration and the growing bureaucracy. And so they have no incentive to change. They have incentive to grow, but they don't have incentive to fix the problem. So I think, to be honest with you, what Millie did was absolute genius. Closed 11 ministries, put them all on the street and said, go fend for yourselves. We don't need you anymore. Thank you very much. I thought it was wonderful.
And I was just going to say, I'm afraid some of those administrative capacities and some of those bureaucrats are going to be in trouble, because I actually am solution focused. So you're right in that. That is my full intention when I'm elected, is to find solutions. And if that means finding new people or less people to help me create those, determine those, implement those, so be it.
Cool. I like what you're saying. I like everything about what you're saying. It is time.
It is time. And the one thing I would say about that is one of the things that I've actually heard over and over and over again in the last year that I've been, you know, I've been all over the province in the last year for various reasons. Sometimes it was party related. Sometimes it was town halls that I was doing about something specific. Very often that Healthcare Practitioners and Occupations Act is, and I think you've probably heard this a lot also, Doug, is that people tell me that they don't have a voice. And that's not true. That's simply not true. But Barry, you indicated to it, people have got complacent, they've disengaged, and they've been fear-mongered by every level of government. You know, when you have a federal government that is locking people down, is, you know, shutting people up, is seizing bank accounts, is, you know, threatening people's livelihoods, people are going to stop talking. But if people stop talking and people just don't push back, it's going to continue. So it's time for people to stand up and empower themselves and recognize that they do have a voice and that they need to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And you can do it quietly. You can do it not quietly. Whatever you do, just do it. So this election, we need people out and we need them to participate in a process that is a huge privilege to be part of, which is a democratic one. There's lots of countries in the world that don't get their choice. And so people here need to take that very seriously. And this election, provincially and federally, they need to activate and they need to use their voice they need to vote. They need to make a choice of what they want to happen in their lives.
Okay, and the provincial election in British Columbia is October of this year, correct?
It is. Currently scheduled for the 19th of October, 2024.
Okay, well, we got to get our poop together, folks, because what she's saying is absolutely true. We don't have a choice. We have the left, and then we have the left, and we have the left, and then we have the right. And the right is the right, period. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, you know, I agree with everything Rosalind has said. I've said this, you know, and I said it earlier in your show, that people, the hero you're looking for, ladies and gentlemen, is looking back at you every morning in the mirror. Get off the couch, get out the door, and start participating. You don't do it for yourselves, then do it for your kids. Don't do it for your kids, then do it for your grandkids. This has got to stop. It's got to stop. SOGI 123 is grooming children. Why? Why would they want to groom your grandchildren or your children? Get involved. If you can't get involved at the political level for the province, get involved at the political level at the school board or at the municipal board. But get involved.
I'm just going to jump in here, Doug, because it popped into my head as soon as you mentioned, you know, parents getting involved. It's not just about education and SOGI. This provincial government announced last week that they are going to give out, excuse my language here because I don't believe this for one second, safer fentanyl, and they are going to make it available to youth without parental consent.
Correct.
Like, are you, like, parents out there, are you okay with that? Like, that's a real question. Are you okay with your child or your grandchild having access to whatever safer fentanyl is? Because I don't believe there is safe fentanyl unless it's administered in a hospital environment, particularly with youth. I don't know if there's an equivalent of Boy Scouts that teaches you how to use fentanyl safely. I don't believe there is. Like, that's a ludicrous idea.
So, go ahead, Doug.
Also, the federal government now wants to push the MAIDS, the MAIDS program for children without parental consent. So if your child is depressed, they can go to their doctor and say, "Look, I want to die. So you know, kill me, please." You know. Because I need to commit suicide.
How screwed up is it?
Because the kid is depressed because he got two C's and a B rather than two B's and an A. Oh, I'm depressed. I'm going to kill myself. Well, I'm going to go to the government. The government's going to kill me for me. I can do that now. And that's what the federal government's pushing to do this year. They're trying to get the MAIDS so that children under 12 could commit suicide without parental consent.
Yeah, so
I don't know what to say to that. Go ahead.
Well, Barry, it's like you indicated before, and Doug said the same thing. Like, you know, not just here, across Canada. Like, people need to, you know, they need to recognize that these social programs are not enabling anybody. In fact, they are continuously making our communities and our families and our province and our country dysfunctional. I have no problem enabling a program that is going to take somebody from a disenfranchised or a living situation that nobody should live in and progress them to a point where they have skills and they're participating and they're contributing back into society. I don't have a problem enabling that. But I have a serious problem with all of these types of programs that are enabling people to continue, you know, with their addictions and increasing, not decreasing, their mental health issues. You know, confusing youth. Like, why would we be doing that? So as a parent, as a sister, as an uncle, as an aunt, you know, as grandparent, you know, like both of you said, get engaged, get up, get off your couch. You know, go volunteer, go sit in a PAC meeting or go sit in a school board meeting and listen to what is being said, right? Like, educate yourselves. What is happening? And then you'll go, oh boy, right? Like, we have generations to protect. And right now, the things that are in place are rapidly destroying them before they even have an opportunity to participate in their lives.
Well, I'm going to call it what it is. It's very, very evil, evil people trying to bring in changes into our society that should never be brought into our society. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, and we're lucky to have somebody like you, Barry, who does a radio show that literally is no holds barred. And you've been on the air now for what, 5 years? Has it been 5 or 6 years?
Ten years.
I'm sorry, 10 years. And oh my God, it's I know I've been back and forth on your show, I think, for the last 3 or 4 years. You've had me on several times every year.
Right.
But we look at other stuff that's out there, other mainstream media, and they just don't do anything. They want to make sure that people don't get involved. As a matter of fact, with what they try to do is suppress the people, which is really sad. And people have to wake up to that tyranny, because that's as tyrannical as having a tyrannical government, is having a tyrannical media that wants to suppress the voices of people like Rosalind, myself, that wonderful good friend of mine, Chris Skye. And I also have another good friend here in Alberta, who's under court order, Pat King. He's under court order. How dare they suppress, these voices? It's just terrible. And that's the mainstream media. That's the courts. That's not the government. That's a court system. So, yeah, I mean, thank you, Barry, for your 10 years on the air and allowing these voices, Rosalind's voice, my voice. I know others as well that you've had over the years. The gentleman that you had on just before us, Mr. Volga, another guy, wonderful guy. So.
Well, thanks for the kind words. We got a minute left here, guys. Roxanne, I would love
Rosalind.
To have you on next
Rosalind.
Week. Rosalind, sorry. I would like to perhaps get you and a couple other people from your party in next week. If you want to make that happen, we can talk after the show's over. Thanks for coming in today and sharing your thoughts. Doug Borse, always good to have you in. But I'm going to have to let you go. Our time is up and the jingle's going to come in. So bye for now.
Thank you for the invite, Barry. Really much. Very, very, very appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's it, folks. Show's over. I'll be back next week. Same time, same place. Please tune in then. God bless you. Have a great week. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Hi, I'm Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Fripp Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan Baker. Welcome to the Crypt.
What the heck is the truth, jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad.